So this is the last of the Ephesians 5 series, and so we're in, I have at the bottom 28 through 31. That's not correct.
Oh.
It's 32 through 33. And I put it several different places, and I didn't make it there. So anyway, that should be correct. So Ephesians 5, 32 through 33. Well, Nancy, could I have you read that, please?
Mm-hmm. This mystery is great, but I am speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Nevertheless, each individual among you also is to love his own wife, even as himself, and the wife must see to it that she respects her husband.
Okay. Without going into lots of detail here, the thing that comes out is this word mystery, the mysterion. That's the one that I kept making the fun of, the moose. Ultimately, in Colossians 1, he explains his use of the word mystery. Okay, verse 26, that is the mystery which has been hidden from the past ages and generations, but has now been manifested to his saints, to whom God willed to make known what is the riches of the glory of the mystery. That's what was manifested among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. So this word mystery is reversed from the pagan use, which was used in the mystery religions. It refers to a truth previously unknown, but which is now made known to all willing to hear. The mysteries of the pagan religions, you couldn't tell anybody. Paul turns that around and says, here's something which wasn't known before, but I'm telling everybody who'll listen.
Yeah.
Okay?
Hmm. So this is kind of an aside here. This is why Christians have been so opposed to secret organizations in art.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, the spiritual truth of the gospel is to be made open.
Mm-hmm.
The secretive thing is not there. And that's why he turns the word mystery upside down from the, you know, it was death sentence, supposedly, if you violated your oath about this deep dark secret, whereas Paul turns around and says, I'll tell anybody who will listen, and this is something made known, not something kept secret. But then comes a key point in verse 32. This mystery is great, but I am speaking with reference to Christ and the church. So he is not saying that this whole topic of husband and wife as Christ and the church is really, really mysterious. Okay? He didn't say, man, I can't figure it out. He's saying that the truth now revealed in this passage has far-reaching implications. It is a massive truth. It's a huge truth. And that's the thing that I get excited about when you bring it into the marriage realm. It's not that, boy, this is really, really foggy. You know, this is really, really uncertain. But instead, he's saying, man, this is fantastic. Okay? This is really cool. And it's one reason why I look at it. And it says, here's the Apostle Paul. You know, this mystery is great. By the way, as far as I know, this is the only mystery he said was great. But, so what he's saying here is that this is a phenomenal insight. And it's one of the reasons why I get so excited about my marriage to Nancy. Is because I look at it and I say, this is phenomenal stuff. This is great. And there are over a dozen places that the New Testament gives various mysteries, things revealed. This is the one that gets called great. And so what he's saying is that what is being revealed here, previously unrevealed, not that it's really mysterious, but what's being revealed here is phenomenal stuff. Really fantastic. Okay? As I put it here, it has far-reaching implications. This is why he is telling us about God's design for marriage, a design that is in profound and marvelous contrast to anything this world has to offer with eternal significance. You know, one of the things I was thinking is, as Hal went home to be with the Lord, that we talked before about, you know, Hal has stepped into the reality.
Mm-hmm.
He and Lindy, you know, enjoyed living out this mystery. But he stepped into the reality. Before that, I mean, it's really fantastic to live the analogy, but to step into the reality that before he was picturing, that's great. And you know, it's funny, when I saw Lindy first thing this morning, I thought, well, she's going to be all broken up, and
yeah.
You know, And all she said to me was, "How's happy? I'm happy."
Mm.
I'm sure there's sadness there, but that's pretty cool.
That's really
cool. This mystery is great. So that's a unique phrase that doesn't show up anywhere. Okay, but the next one has a pattern, but it doesn't come across in English. But I am speaking. This is a combination of the words that in the Greek is the one that Christ used to say things. This is what I speaking as speaking of God's authority.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when Paul says, "But I am speaking," isn't just I'm giving you my opinion. He's saying this mystery is fantastic, which we don't find all mysteries called fantastic. Great. But he says this is a God-spoken thing. Okay? I am speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Okay, top of page 2. In Matthew 5:43-44, this is examples of, but I say to you, that's the same, I am speaking.
Mm-hmm.
With reference to Christ and the church. So what he's saying is this mystery, this revelation now revealed, not thing really mysterious. This revelation now revealed is really great. It's fantastic. It's phenomenal. But I am speaking, making a God-spoken revelation with regards to the husband is to the wife as Christ is to the church. He's underscoring that relationship. See? It's a deliberate revelation. Now, we have in there will be Christ in the church, and that's the thing to look at. This is describing the reality. Loving eternally, totally unlimited, unhindered by time and space or any other constraints. That's the reality. That's the real marriage. We get to live it out as an illustration here, living the analogy with all the constraints of this world and the sin nature and everything else thrown in. The reality of Christ and the church. The reality of Christ and the church is one that is eternal, unhindered. Okay? It will be the fulfillment of the joy set before him for which he endured the cross. This is what it's for. See that? This is what it's for. There will be no longing for the best things of this world. Think of, man, this is really great. What's that?
When you say that, it makes me think how we consider gold so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the paving stones of heaven you walk on.
Yeah, that's what you walk on. Even the things that were wonderful gifts of God here will not be removed to our disappointment, but will be overshadowed by the glory of Christ. Then verse 33, nevertheless, each individual among you also is to love his own wife even as himself. And this is where he says the love the fourth time. But it's different. And it's different in this respect that he makes it singular. Each individual one among you. Before it was a general statement to all of them. All you husbands. All y'all. Okay? Here, he says each individual husband among you. Okay? Is to love his own wife. Gets very individual and personal about it. Nobody can sidestep it. He's just generalizing. Well, that's just for the average guy. No. Each one. And the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. This is a kind of a bookend reversal of the prior pattern. It started off referring to the wife, then the bulk of the sandwich to the husband, and then now back to the wife. Both the husbands and the wives were plurals at the start, and now they finish off as in the singular. He's shifting his focus back to the wife. It's also consistent with the husband being told to initiate that unconditional love with his wife, and the wife is told to respect her husband. So the key things, it's not generalization, this is personal. This is across the board for all the church, but for each individual one. So he wants to get the point across that this isn't a generalization, but it's for the entire church. Now, something else to bring out, before I step into what's in the page. this love and respect thing that he brought out in this verse. That's something we've mentioned before, and I want to kind of bring it to the surface again. That as you're thinking about your relationships, that gals are quite often asking in their minds, whether they are consciously or not, they're asking the question, does he love me? All the time. They're asking the question, does he love me? Does he love me? Does he love me? Does he love me? And it's amazing. We can give our wives all kinds of things. We can give them stuff. We can, you know, they give you ads on the TV. You know, if you just buy this four-digit, you know, ring that glitters and sparkles, you know, then she'll be happy. You can do anything you want, but the bottom line is, she's asking the question, does he love me? That's front and center in her thinking. Does he love me? Some years back, we were married but didn't have any kids. I was going to San Jose State, and I would ride the bus back and forth to school because it was affordable. But there was a guy who was an ambulance driver for that particular area in the Silicon Valley. And so I sat down to him next to him one time and asked, I said, what are the primary categories of calls that you get? And he says, most people think of auto accidents. Mm-hmm. He says, we do those, but that isn't number one. He says, you know, a lot of it we have nuts and drunks. He says, that's a lot of our, you know, stuff. But he says, one of the biggest categories, and this is what really surprised me, the area in the Silicon Valley that is sort of the uppity area is Los Altos Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the homes there are, you know, double-digit million-dollar homes now. They're very, you know, expensive homes. And the people there, these are the people that have made it financially. If they're not, they're deep in hawk.
Yeah.
But anyway, so and these are the, you know, there's the Los Altos Hills Country Club. Here's the, you know, five-car garage with Mercedes mm-hmm. and Bentleys and everyone. And so these are the folks that have really made it in the Silicon Valley. And here's the Silicon Valley, which is, I mean, that's a big mm-hmm. place of technology. But he said, one of the biggest categories we have after the nuts and drunks is wives in Los Altos Hills committing or trying to commit suicide.
Wow.
Attempting suicide. He says that's one of our biggest categories. I was stunned. And he says, because the wives have everything, but they don't know that their husbands love them. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's stunning.
That is.
I mean, because there's, you know, anything you want. Fancy clothes, you know, jewelry, the cars, the country club, you know, stuff, all kinds of, anything you like, you know. Our dinnerware is the finest. Everything is great. You know, we have maids and, you know, butlers and everybody else hired to, you know, handle things around the house and people doing the yard. I mean, life is nice. But the wives are desperate because their husbands don't, they're so busy mm-hmm. that their husbands don't convey that they love their wife. And so the attempted suicide rate there is much, much higher than the people who live in the apartments in the Silicon Valley. So that really struck me. And it's a key thing here. The wife is asking the question, does he love me? Unconditionally. And for the husband, the question going through the guy's mind, yeah, he cares, does the wife love him? But we've talked about that, that's a love in return. But the guy is asking principally, does she respect me? And so those really important. Paul is not just dropping off some, you know, last minute incidental details, but these are central and key things. And frequently, when difficulties come between husband and wife, it's on those issues. It is, you know, he's all bent out of shape, and she doesn't understand, and the issue, you know, that's gotten him is he's thinking she doesn't respect me. And at the same time, the wife, you know, is responding, and she's got this message in her mind, he doesn't love me. And so the consequence being that because she's answering that question in the negative, that's front and center. Same thing for the guy. Those questions are principal. So we'll continue on, but I wanted to, those love and respect terms that Paul brought up, very important things. Okay. The his own wife, I'd like to go to that one. His own wife. This phrase is consistent with his speaking to individual husbands, but is also calling for Christian husbands to live quite contrary to pagan culture of the time, where a desirable quality for a wife was one who didn't mind or pay any attention to the husband's relationship with other women. That was some of the writers of the New Testament time wrote this was one of the qualities you want in a wife, that she doesn't say anything about the husband's other relationships. Even as himself, this kind of coming back to the message and the caring love. We expressed as the husband widening the care he has for himself to include her within the care he has for himself. This circle of care is put into real life action with three verbs. Unconditional love, nourishes, cherishes. That's the character of that widened circle of love. And then he has the wife. This is the continuing focus on the individual husband and wife. The wife's part in the relationship is essential for the marriage to live out the full expression of the eternal relationship between Christ and the church. This complementary oneness. Husband and the wife are to express together as one. And this must see to it, or in the King James, to see. These words aren't actually directly in the Greek, but are only implied by kind of rolling off of the imperative. So it's interesting that we mentioned earlier, being subject to is not directly, the wife being subject to the husband is not directly in the Greek, and in here the must see to it is not directly in the Greek either. Mm-hmm. Both are implied. So Paul is telling the wife as subtly, and yet still saying it, as subtly as possible, to submit to the husband and to respect the husband. Now this respects, this is the same word in 5:21, to be subject to one another in the fear, phobos. And so this respect is to have, it's, phobos is not trembling in fear and, oh no, it's my husband. Okay? But instead it's an ultimate respect. Okay? It's a regard for. And think of it, what's the opposite of respect?
Well, other than the obvious disrespect.
I was
going to
say, that's too obvious.
Kind of a disdain.
Okay, a disdain. Mm-hmm. All right. Can you think of any other words that come across that kind of communicate the other end of respect?
Like apathy or...
Yeah.
Apathy. Okay, apathy. Okay, good. Anything else come to mind? Any other words?
And yes, guys, you can respond.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can throw out another term, and I think all these shades of meaning are helpful. Disregard. What he says doesn't matter. How he feels doesn't matter. You know, what his view of things, that doesn't make any difference. Okay? Think about all the different words that people have thrown out are good, but I think it's good to look at the opposite to get a sense of, you know, by the negative definition, that tells you where you end up mm-hmm. as well. And it's interesting, you know, you'll have books out there, what's one of the ones of recent years, you know, women are from Venus,
oh, yeah.
Men are from Mars, things like that. But ultimately, you know, I don't know about you, I've never been to Mars and never been to Venus, but this love and respect issue is one that's real close to home, and it is a distinction between the guys and the gals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something to ponder when, if a husband and wife find themselves struggling over something, it's worth asking, what's the love and respect issue here? And, you know, he settles in on this point as well. Okay, page 4.
Are you sure you want to skip that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. In this last one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just exactly why should the believing wife respect her husband? Okay, bottom of page 3. Because the husband's place in the relationship is an awesome love assignment. The basis of the wife's respect is not the worthiness of the husband on his own merit. The husband being charged with living out the character of Christ is Christ-loved and loves and forever will love the church. the character of the husband's designed role is awesome in the extreme. Let's ask, what happens if there's a breakdown and the husband is not conveying to the wife that he loves her? And then let's make it go full circle. The wife is not conveying that she respects her husband. Where does the relationship go from there?
Nowhere.
If this is the loop that Paul's laid out here, the keys to oneness. Because what happens if that starts to degrade? If the wife is not conveying respect to the husband, the husband's not conveying love to the wife, then what happens is the relationship starts going downhill. And instead of the oneness principle being played out, you begin to have two individuals. They might still be legally married, might still be living at the same house, but you end up having two individuals instead of mutually communicating what the other needs. You have two individuals, and the relationship starts degrading into separateness, and the oneness is not there. Those two questions are key ones that I, ponder as I look at different relationships. Nancy and I, of course, have a chance to sit down and talk with individual couples on different things, and these come forward. Mm-hmm. If those things on either end or both are somehow lacking or even unclear, do you clearly understand that he loves you? It's a little foggy. Does he clearly understand that you respect him? Not so much. See, and if that's what's showing up, then you're starting to see the degradation of the oneness principle. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, on the next page. The wife's respect for the husband's responsibility allows the husband to stand before God in the call to live out the sacrificial, sanctifying, caring, bonded love, which is both modeled by and is from Christ. Her respect and prayerful support is not an invitation to be human doormat, but is her response of love and a challenge to the husband to live out the unconditional love that he is quite unequivocally called to live by faith in God. So what you have there is the wife's respect of the husband puts him in the spot of being responsible for the Lord. If she disregards him, what is she saying about his role? See, what happens is her disrespect for him communicates to him that his stance before the Lord is somehow not of real value, not of real consequence.
So on here it says that it's a response to, her respect is a response to his love. So then can a wife respect her husband if he doesn't love her?
What this really looks at is the love of the husband for the wife, is that conditional or unconditional?
Unconditional. Yeah.
It's unconditional. The wife may not always have grounds for respecting the husband conditionally.
Mm-hmm.
What she is honoring is the place that God has given him.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be a need to examine that on the part of the wife.
Mm-hmm.
That look at the awesome role. One of the questions Gary had, I think a time or two back was, when does the husband quit getting trounced on? And it's an appropriate question because you think about it, there is a lot placed on the husband. And a part of the wife's respect perspective needs to be an understanding of, boy, look what the Lord has placed on this guy. There is a lot on his shoulders. And the respect is not simply a matter of the wife looking at the husband saying, is he respectable? But looking
right
at the role that the Lord has placed in him.
I think that neither party is exempt from needing and being required to trust the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
That if a husband is not loving his wife unconditionally, her calling is still to respect her husband. Her calling from God is still to respect her husband. If she is not respecting her husband, he is still called to love her unconditionally. So neither one is exempt from their responsibility because the other partner is not fulfilling.
There is, the next point we have here is this extreme marriage. That essentially this is not just like an average marriage, but this is marriage that is defined way outside of anything this world understands. It's incomprehensibly good. And one of the things that Nancy and I will talk to couples about, remember we had the kind of the picture, I think it was the last time we met, there's this foundation, and there's a foundation of love in the relationship, and then a companionship love, and then a romantic love on top of that. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that we present before people is how do I, as a husband or and a wife, how do I protect love? Because that's a thing. How do I protect love in the relationship? Some of that's obviously expressed in positive ways, but often protecting love looks to how do I defend the love relationship, and what that often ends up doing is what do you think of protecting? You protect something that is vulnerable. You protect something that is valuable. And so as you look at this, here is this love and respect relationship. You want to look at it in terms of, how do I protect love? And so I guess, just asking some questions, looking for your thoughts and input. What are some things that would damage love? What are some things that would hurt love?
Unfaithfulness?
Yeah. If you look at that, that's going to be a problem. All right. What else?
As far as the man not seeking God and having faith in his that he'll help the marriage, not trusting God to help in the marriage.
Since he's really the channel of love in the relationship, his relationship with the Lord is a protection of love, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So the maintenance of his relationship with the Lord is a protection for love. Good point. Good point. What are some other things that come to mind? How about sharp words? Are those hurt love? Sharp words? And that can be a range of things. It can be anything from something that jabs real personally, You are this. You always do this. You never do that, sharp, painful, hurtful words. Those are things that's contrary to protecting love. If love is this valuable but vulnerable thing, then how do we protect love? That's a key thing to look at here. It's worth pondering because it is vulnerable, isn't it? The Lord is always going to be there. We can't do anything to quote. Certainly, we can grieve the Holy Spirit, but we can't hurt the Lord. That foundation is there biblically, but in terms of how it's carried out, worth our thinking about and even talking about is how do we protect love? And let's look at the other part. How do we protect respect? Because that's the other thing that he's brought up. We've kind of asked the contrary. What's the opposite of respect? What hurts respect?
One thing that was brought up earlier was apathy.
Okay.
Just like a disregard. Just ignoring.
Okay. Yeah.
Disagreeing.
And really the same things that hurt love hurt respect.
Isn't that something? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a commonality between the two. They come at the same thing from a different direction, but there is a commonality between love and respect. Mm-hmm. And so it's important, I think, especially the guy is often thought of as kind of a protector. Mm-hmm. And one of the things for a guy to ponder is, you know, it oftentimes seems fairly obvious to physically protect, but protecting love in the relationship. And on the wife's part, to look at how do I protect that respect? That can, you know, it's possible that could get damaged. Mm-hmm. But those things are worth pondering, worth discussing, worth talking about. And it's also a means of communication. You know, if I am talking to Nancy and at some point and I recognize, wow, that really hurt love, you know, mm-hmm. I can go to her having an understanding instead of just saying, gee, things aren't right and we're messed up or, you know, something. I can get specific. You know, what's the issue that's really going on here? I have just said some things or failed to say some things that damaged love. And so now I've got something I can, you know, get a handle on. Mm-hmm. And that it's that issue, and I can come to Nancy because my place is protecting that love. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I can come to her and talk about that. I did some injury here. What do we need to do to heal it? And to try to convey to her, you know, what's really my heart and what's the truth, and to lay those things out. So there's a place of protecting it. There's also a place of healing, and to think about those, and to remember, you know, in the husband-wife relationship, just what, you know, remember what Paul put his finger on it. What's the question that each one is asking, first and foremost? And the infidelity issue that, you know, you brought up as being one that's important. Guess where it hurts the gal?
You're hurt.
She's, I'm not loved. Mm-hmm. Okay. For the guy, I'm not respected. Isn't that something? Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's the same event. There's some commonality. Nancy's right. Mm-hmm. But it strikes each one in a different way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why don't you read the expanded and explain for us here? Okay.
Excuse me. This mystery which I am revealing by God's deliberate intent is great in spiritual significance both for your daily life now as well as for eternity. But in contrast to all that you have heard from any other quarter, I am here and now speaking in this passage with reference to the eternal romance of Christ and the Church, brought about through the fulfillment of God's eternal purpose in which Christ paid the bride price through his own blood and through which the Church, his body, was purchased because of his love for us.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, each and every individual husband among you is to unconditionally love his own wife even as an extension of the love he has for himself. And the wife likewise has the responsibility by the relationship the husband is to the wife as Christ is to the Church to see that she respects her husband not by his earning and deserving it, but because of the awesome place he has been given by God, having the love of Christ for the Church as his clear and singular model for daily life.
Okay. Thoughts on that? Wonderings, questions, exasperations?
Well, just kind of a comment.
Yeah.
This morning, I went online and we don't take the newspaper, so occasionally I'll read articles online, and, you know, Tom and Katie got married.
I know, Tomcat.
And so I was reading this article about it, and they did a Scientology ceremony, which I thought, what does that mean? And finally they kind of gave some definition, had some specific points of Scientology, they said. Mm-hmm. And then the one point that they said that they actually brought out was that you don't go to bed without resolving issues you've had during the day. And I went, oh, you mean that biblical concept of don't let the sun go down on your anger?
Yeah.
Exactly what I thought.
And I thought, how interesting that this wise science fiction writer found a biblical concept and put it in different words. And people think it's cool now.
Yes. Yeah.
But it is a concept I think that, though it's not specifically stated in this passage, mm-hmm. it applies here. If if there's been an issue throughout the day where she doesn't feel loved or he doesn't feel respected, it can be dealt with today instead of waiting until a week or a month or 5 years down the road where things have become pretty volatile and hostile.
Anything else? Something I was thinking of, just looking ahead here, we're taking this next Sunday off, taking a weekend off, and then returning back in December. First two Sundays in December, and then taking some time off until next year. I think I'm going to switch the next passage, and I'm going to go instead to 1 Corinthians 7. And we'll still return to the passages that we had planned there, but 1 Corinthians 7. And one of the reasons for that is that it relates to the last of the four kinds of love, the bonded love. And this deals more with the physical relationship in the marriage. Typically, Nancy and I will put that later. But a lot of times that has to do with kind of the sequence in the premarriage counseling, where the physical relationship ends up being a bigger point. And one of the reasons why I bring that up is, and I want to move it ahead of where I initially had in mind, is because of that fourth kind of love is one that Paul brings up, that bonded love. And so, okay, what does that look like? And try to give some better definition while it's there, because we just had it last week. And rather than let that kind of get a little cold, I'd rather go right into it for our purposes here. And because it's interesting that the understanding of the physical relationship in marriage, one of the things we saw is the direction of the principles go from the spiritual to the physical. That's there. Nonetheless, the love and respect issue ends up also being very intimately tied with the physical relationship in marriage as well. And so anyway, I'm gonna move that ahead. So we'll meet two Sundays from now and address that and shift the other things a little farther down. It also brings up another point in the marriage relationship, and that is while in Ephesians 5 the general directive to the wife is to submit to the husband, this is an area where there's a mutual submission. It's like there's a different principle in play. So that's another reason for taking a look at it and right behind this. So anyway, a change in schedule, but just to let you know what's coming down the line. And we did a potluck this time, so 2 weeks from the day would be just to bring her on. And we usually end up sharing some stuff.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other thoughts, questions? Okay. One other thing before we call it. If in the course of things, because I'll typically, like I do now, say any other thoughts, questions, and that's fine. If you think of something later you'd like to have us talk about or me talk about, give me a call, send me an email, stop me in the street, put a note on my car, windshield, whatever you want to do, But send those along too, okay? All right, that's great. Lord, we thank you that you've given us guidance and insight in these special and precious relationships. And what's even more valuable and fantastic, Lord, is that these relationships are illustrations of our relationship with you. And we thank you for that. And we give you praise for it. And we ask you for wisdom in these things. In Jesus' name.